section of this meeting. Keep in mind, please, that public comments should be limited to 3 minutes per public comment, so please try to respect that time frame. And if you're lucky, our city attorney will be timing you, so you won't have to watch the watch. Mr. Anderson, would you please make your way to the podium?
Do I need a microphone? Are you guys okay?
No, you need to use it.
Microphone, and this is being recorded.
My name is Todd Anderson. I live at 1354 Vernon North Drive, and we are currently, and I'm not here to talk about the specific variance, but we're currently fighting a variance request that would allow a 154 student daycare center to be installed in the office property behind our neighborhood. And the playground for the facility would be within probably 60 feet of some of our homes, some of the homes of the people in our neighborhood. And again, I'm not asking for, I know you guys have nothing to do with those variance requests, and I guess have even been instructed not to become involved in that. So my debate is more one with the process. We received a letter that was dated May 20th that informed people that 250 feet of the property that was under question, that there would be a meeting on June 4th to address this variance. Well, if you have, assuming there's opposition to the request, you just can't pull information together. You can't evaluate the proposal adequately in 15 days, or minimum 15 days. I don't know when we actually received the notice. So one debate, and I've mentioned this to at least one of you in email, is the process, I think, is too developer-friendly and not enough homeowner-friendly right now. And I've talked to Howard Koontz about that, and he's comfortable with it. But I hope that you guys won't be comfortable with it, and it's something to consider. And then, secondly, I think that I voted for the city, and I assume, along with a lot of other people, probably the top issue was planning, development, zoning, maybe public safety ranked in there, but planning, zoning, development, all that was very high on our agenda. And I almost feel like it's not being considered strongly enough. The other uses that could be put in these offices would be a fraternity house. I mentioned that to Howard Koontz, and he looked at me, or he actually brought it to my attention and said, well, you understand this could be a fraternity house. No, I didn't, and it shouldn't be, and not within 50 feet of a residential neighborhood, right? At least in my mind. A liquor store, if it were part of the hotel, could be put within 50 feet of our neighborhood and anyone else that backs up to commercial zoning. It's not just us. So I guess what I would encourage you to do is, I think that there were obviously time constraints, and we adopted a lot of the DeKalb County ordinance, and I'm sure there was no alternative to that, but I would encourage you guys to, sooner than later, be after, get to the point where I'm talking specifically about, relative to residential areas, tightening up the zoning restrictions or the zoning ordinance, but I'm sure there are other issues that probably need to be evaluated. I hope we're not DeKalb County. I mean, that's what we were trying not to, or what I was hoping not to be, was DeKalb County. So if we can, it's something that's pretty important to me specifically, but I think it probably affects a lot of other people that probably haven't been affected yet by it and could well be affected. So it's a broad issue that right now is very specific to us. My 3 minutes are probably up.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Joe Hardy.
Hi there, Joe Hirsch, and I'll reserve my comments for the Adopt a Spot program for later. All right, so I want to talk
a little bit closer.
How about that? Very good. I just wanted to touch on a couple of items on the agenda for discussion. Number 14, I wanted to talk about discussion of land use applicant attendance requirements. I'm not sure why this is really inserted as a requirement for the public hearings where people have to attend. I know it can be harder to make a decision when all parties are not there, but these are agenda items that have been on notice and where people have done background research. And it just seems that if a council member or commissioner is simply annoyed that an applicant is not there, it doesn't mean that the application shouldn't have merit. Of course, applicants should attend, and it usually helps their cause, but by requiring their attendance, you would seem to be codifying that our city government is, you know, demanding respect just out of annoyance. It should be the other way around. The city residents or the business owners that are the applicants should not be looked down upon and punished when they are seeking a land change. Because if we were to look at this conversely, you know, if a planning commissioner or a city council member is absent from a land use hearing, does it mean that all the applications for that day, for that hearing, be approved? No, of course not. So please don't make it appear to put yourselves on a higher pedestal than the applicants, the residents of Dunwoody. Also, on the other item, discussions of land use public notice for the signs and such. As far as notifying residents of zoning use request changes, first I saw that it requires notification by mail of properties within 250 feet. 250 feet is maybe two neighbors down, or, you know, that would receive letters in the mail, maybe three neighbors. So that's not exactly notifying the neighborhood, and I hope that might be something that you would reconsider, the 250 feet line there. Also, the zoning notice signs that we have posted, those are a joke. The signs are supposed to have 2-inch-high letters and be perpendicularly facing traffic, meaning that you are forced to, you have to read the handwriting while driving. And is that really full disclosure? You know, is that openness to the public to require people to read handwriting while driving? The DunwoodySingles.org signs are a lot easier to read than our handwritten zoning notice signs. There's a huge variable having to read the handwriting on a sign, and you know you can't really read those when driving by. It just seems to be some sort of silly legal requirement that we abide by. So I was hoping that we might be able to really make them truly readable. Sandy Springs has huge type signs posted fully explaining the issue. You've probably seen them, those big, huge yellow signs. I'm not sure, you know, people would have to get on the internet to understand everything that's on the sign. You know, as the previous speaker just talked about, the zoning request for the day school, there were three zoning requests crammed by handwriting into one little sign, and it was on a street that doesn't have sidewalks. So the only way you could see it, if you weren't within 250 feet to receive a letter, was by driving down a road of all the other signs to see three zoning notices handwritten onto a little sign. That's not exactly full disclosure. I don't know who in Sandy Springs has to bear the burden of those expensive signs they put up. That would be something I have to look at and address. But I hope that you can agree that Dunwoody signs serve little purpose other than just trying to get away with some sort of, you know, public notice notification there. So I hope that we can do better than that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Terry Nolan.
Thank you and good evening. My name is Terry Nolan. I live at 1344 Vernon North Drive, and I'm the lucky husband of a fellow blogger, Donna Nall, Knitter Nall, that John Hennigan knows well. My family has lived here for 11 years. I represent the Mount Vernon North neighborhood, which is directly behind the Dunwoody Village office condos, something you just heard about tonight. During this meeting tonight, you're discussing the public notice requirements for zoning and zoning variances. Our neighborhood is currently contesting a zoning variance, as you heard, that requests construction of a daycare playground within a protected stream buffer. So we know firsthand of a significant issue that I want to bring to your attention, and I'm going to bring a solution that you can act on tonight. Focusing on the public notice requirement is important, but I maintain not sufficient. The current code is a minimum 15-day letter, sign, and newspaper advertisement. In our case, this 15-day period was barely met. The date of the letter is May 20, as you heard Todd mention. That's the day it was mailed, not when we received it, so you know how that goes. This is an absolutely inadequate time to receive the mail notice, to get additional information, to prepare for input to the Zoning Board of Appeals, or even to engage an attorney properly. Petitioners have far more time to prepare a case, as they have the luxury of setting the deadline after they prepare all their legal documents and work with city staff without the knowledge of affected citizens even knowing that's going on. The process followed by the city staff in this particular variance request is gravely flawed. Number one, the public notice to us was actually incorrect. The project address was wrong. The variances listed in this letter and actually listed on the sign that Judd just mentioned did not match the site plan. The interpretation, thirdly, the interpretation of the underlying code that required a variance by city staff turned out to be totally incorrect, and they themselves have admitted that since to neighborhood representatives. Here's where you can take action. So gravely flawed is this process, and you can deal with process, maybe not the variance, but so gravely flawed is the current process that the only recourse is a total and immediate temporary moratorium on zoning and zoning variances until your city staff and our city staff is better trained and the city council establishes a level playing field for both sides of a petitioner's request. I propose a 90-day moratorium is the absolute minimum period for us to get this process fixed, because it is not working now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Nall. Bob Callan?
Thank you, council members. We were discussing the three-legged stool, as I mentioned before, with respect to the CVB. The business, PCID, and retailer or restaurateur is who I'm really suggesting also needs to be part of that three-legged stool. I mean, what I'm talking about are folks, you know, such as Brian Olson, who runs a restaurant here. Folks like Brian Tate, who lives here and who also runs a very successful business. That's the caliber of representation that this organization needs to be a very good business organization. And it's important to consider the self-sustaining nature of the organization in the long run, because if we do anything in creating anything, which a lot of us work to create the city, you all are here managing the city, setting the policy, but it's not for you that it's being created, it's for the future when we are all gone. And that's really the way I look at these things. How is the organizational structure set up so that when we are gone, it still is very, very successful? And, you know, it's important to recognize that this is not the Planning Commission, not the Zoning Board of Appeal, or Community Council. Those are organizations that specifically engage the police power of the state. That's how they're set up. This is, I think, as correctly stated by Spurgeon Richardson, from whom you've heard, is a business. It needs to be run like a business. And, you know, I can just give you a quick, simple example. We have been so happy and so proud of the PCID in this community where we sit right now. And I know, being involved, when it was created, discussions like this came up. How is it going to be organized? Thankfully, we came to the conclusion that the business community, in the long run, will do right by all of us. And I think that's why we need to look at this, with the three-legged stool, the residences, the business community, and the hoteliers each have a good say in it. And I know it's been said many times that you cannot delegate responsibility, and that's true. You can't delegate trust. You give it. You have to recognize that I believe in the citizens of our community, and I trust them. You put in place appropriate systems to verify that trust, as you would expect as any good business person. Just like a kid growing up, one day you have to allow them to do the things that you want them to do that they've been taught to do. And I firmly believe that the way we're heading with the 501c6 is a great way to go. I think a balanced approach is a great way to go. And I think the great thing about it is it will serve all of us well for our citizens' tax dollar. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dallas. Tom Lambert?
Thank you. My name is Tom Lambert. I am currently serving on the Sustainability Board, and I also work with Councilman Hannigan and Richard Meehan on the City Safe Routes grant. I'm also the former chair of the Kingsley Charter Council, and I mentioned that just to clarify the point that I have a little homework done on the subject I want to talk about, and I want to talk a little bit about the radar signs. I was at the demonstration, and we're going to discuss the results of that demonstration, so I won't go into that. But I would like to encourage the council to strongly consider voting to find the funding for these signs. I think they'll make a tremendous difference. We did, as part of our Safe Routes grant, we did some surveys of parents the number one concern of parents, or 75% that said why they would not allow their students to walk to school, was, in fact, traffic safety. It wasn't stranger danger and all that stuff. It was traffic safety, and rightly so. We had some traffic studies done, and so I'm speaking strictly from Kingsley, but I'm sure all of the other schools could find similar stuff. North Peachtree Road, north of Tilley Mill, the speed limit there is 25 miles an hour. In a 24-hour period, 80 cars were clocked over 50 miles an hour. 7 vehicles were actually clocked going over 70 miles an hour. And that's pretty scary. That's a pretty windy section of road as well. So to think, I think we're all aware that there's a lot of speeding going on. These were obviously, these reports were done prior to the city's formation. But I believe it's a public safety issue, the speeding issue. And I know up for consideration is the fact that the city is considering possibly if the PTAs or PTOs at the local schools were to fund a sign that the city might match that. I know that's one of the considerations. I would urge the city to consider just purchasing the signs outright and not requiring the school to purchase the signs. The schools, just like everyone else, is feeling the pinch of the economy. Fundraising is down. Speaking from Kingsley alone, as a charter school, about 50% of our budget is allocated away by the terms of our charter. So that would lead to purchase a single sign would be 20% of what was left over. And that's money that I feel, and hopefully you guys would agree, would be much better served going towards books and educational programs in the schools. I also believe that although the schools are the focus of this report, and I agree with that, that this is something that will benefit the entire community and not just the schools. I know we're working on a master plan. I know there is a very long list of requests on there, and the city needs to prioritize those requests. I would hope that this would be pushed up towards the top of those requests, and that the city would consider not requiring a school to buy their own sign before they fund one for a community, because I believe the public safety of the entire community benefits, not just the schools. And I would think that would be a encourage more people to walk, not only at the schools, but also in the neighborhoods as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Those are the last public comment cards that we had.